Rise and Shine to Sunshine Radio 96.7, Saturday mornings. This is Voice for Veterans and the rest of us who say we support veterans too. News, commentary, information, education, music, and entertainment. New just for you, 96.7. Now, you've heard the rest. Stay tuned for the best. Rise and Shine to Sunshine Radio. And stay with us all day long. Yes, this is Keith, the boss of the beach, and I want to say thank you for joining us this week. This week's show is going to be all about racing and sports and entertainment and fun. And I got Sam Waltz, a veteran. He was in the secret side of the war, but he was in outside Philadelphia. I'm going to let him tell you the story. We'll be right back with more from Sam Waltz. Okay, thank you for enjoying that little interlude, Man and the Machine. And, of course, that's the song. And we're doing the Firestorm Grand Prix, downtown St. Petersburg, and it is fun. But whenever I do it as a voice for veterans, and I just happen to be one of those people that found a veteran when I walked in the door. Sam Waltz, I'm going to let him tell you all about his experience. Sam.
Okay.
Here we go. Sam, the camera's over there. Okay. We're all listening, so we all good.
Keith, a delight to be with you, my friend.
Thank you, Sam.
And I
so
just
much.
feel like I've connected here.
With well, we're family. Anybody who deals with James Brown has got to be a good thing.
Yeah, I hung out with James. James put some soul in my moves.
Put some soul in his moves. He's going to tell you that story in a minute. Talk to me a little bit about how you got in the Army, the fact of where you were from, and where did you go?
I grew up on a farm in Illinois. My father was a sharecropper. Okay. He had dropped out of school in the eighth grade, and he was a World War II vet.
Okay.
And I came out of high school in 65. I was at the university, and Vietnam was really peaking in 67.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, a World War II vet, had fought in North Africa, Italy, Sicily, Messina,
yes,
through Europe.
Yes, sir.
In our family, when your country goes to war, you go to war.
Period.
And so Vietnam was really ratcheting up in 67,
mm-hmm.
and I was one of those soul-searching times, and I looked there, and I was turning 20 years old, and I said, I need to go. And I dropped out of college and volunteered. When you volunteered, you were able to pick your field. My background at the time was journalism.
Okay.
So I picked Army Counterintelligence.
Perfect. And
about half the guys going into counterintel were going over to do combat intel.
Okay.
And I thought that's where the Army would send me. I went into training late 67, came out early in 68, did my advanced training. And about the time I was finishing, that was when Dr. King was killed.
Okay.
4th of April, 1968. I remember it like yesterday.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, American City started to really be torn up. You remember
right,
that period?
Right.
It was very much like the BLM stuff
yes.
a couple of years ago. And all of a sudden, the National Guard was being called into American City.
That's right.
And so as the intel was staffing up to support the Guard, and that's what the Army did. It took me, here I was, an old Illinois farm boy. It put me in Center City, Philadelphia. And that's where I spent the war.
You had to stay in the house until it was at nighttime. You didn't go out.
I didn't go very far,
brother. Not in Center City. I know Center City.
Yep.
The party was on at dark.
It was. There were not a lot of people who looked like me in my neighborhood.
No, not that time of year. And you know, Center City hasn't changed that much after all these years.
It really has not. Philadelphia today is and remains a minority-majority community.
Yes, it is. And all the surroundings, I used to hang out in Norristown and all those, and I know what you're talking about.
Yep, yep. So I knew, got to know that area well. I got out of the Army in 1970. I was married. I went back home to Illinois.
Okay.
I started my career as a journalist in 1970 and finished my degrees, working full-time, going to school full-time. 71, finished one. 73, finished another. I was a reporter. I was teaching. And I got recruited to Wilmington, Delaware, where I became the state capitol bureau chief in the statewide paper. I was covering the governor, the legislature, and this new young U.S. senator, a young guy named Joe. You've heard about
the
him.
Guy, he came out somewhere along and became president along the way.
That's Joe. Joe and I go back. I didn't tell you this.
Right.
Joe and I go back 45 years.
Wow.
I've known him that long. I mentored his daughter.
Yeah.
I knew the son, Bo, who died. Today, Joe lives a block and a half from me. He helps me. He's helped me.
I helped him.
Yeah.
When you go back to Delaware, every now and then, Joe will come out the house to empty the trash.
Yeah, he would. Well, I keep some of his documents in my garage.
Don't you? Top secret. Yeah, don't tell anybody.
So, but I ran the campaign 25 years ago to vindicate the scapegoated World War II Pearl Harbor commanders, Admiral Kimmel and General Short.
Thank God.
And Joe Biden was my point man in that campaign
to help them
out. I got three votes through Congress, 1998, 99, and 2000, to vindicate these men who had been wrong for the success of the Japanese attack.
Well, have they been vindicated?
We did not get everything we wanted, but we made a lot of headway.
Well, if you go to some of the other streaming channels now, you hear the story. It didn't die when you all didn't win. It's still out there.
Well,
and a lot of people still say it's somehow it should be mentioned to the world.
We're still going to get it done. And that's one of the things on my list to talk about with Joe when he gets some spare time outside of the Ukraine and other stuff.
Yes. Do it. Keep me in mind. My father would have believed, he believed in that. He always said that World War II, they need to tell the truth.
They do.
That's all they said. They wouldn't tell us as little boys why, but he said everything that they're talking about Pearl Harbor needs to be brought out.
Yep.
They need to tell. So people called up in Germany and didn't want nobody to know.
That's right. That's right.
So you know I know what I'm talking about.
I know, and I speak today. One of the talks that I do, I'm at heart still a baseball guy.
Okay.
And I've got a talk I do called Catcher, Scholar, Spy, The Incredible Story of Mo Berg, who was the first Jewish baseball player. He played before Hank Greenberg. He was a player in the 20s and 30s.
That's right.
He got into Princeton when Jews could not get into Princeton. And he went on to be a spy for the forerunner of the CIA, the OSS, during World War II. And he spied on the Nazis' bomb project. So I've got a whole talk I do
on
that.
You've got a story that you can tell that's true. I want to mention one other thing. And that Joe Biden in the last few days put a honor around one of the Vietnam veterans.
He did.
Name. What is his name?
I've forgotten his name.
We're going to mention his name in the next break. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the success of continuing the fight. Because I think he spent 40 years trying to get respect, and he got it. Okay, this is Keith, the Boss of the Beach. We're going to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
Down in my soul, fuel injected, I'm ready to roll.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed that little interlude of music. And we're sitting here with one of the greatest of all veterans. The reason I say greatest and one of, because he's still alive. Okay? He's got to be great if he lived this long. But this is Sam Walsh. He was one of that that served during that period that Vietnam was on a rise, but also was on a fall. Let's talk a little bit about after Vietnam. What did you do?
Keith, thank you. My background, my career has been in journalism, political journalism, and in business.
Okay.
So when I got out of the Army, I finished my degrees. I was a reporter in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. But then I got recruited 48 years ago, 1975, to Wilmington, Delaware. So I became a reporter covering the governor, the legislature, the cabinet officers, a young U.S. senator, a guy named Joe Biden. And so I
knew Joe. When Joe was a kid.
When Joe was a young guy, he was 35 years old when I got to know Joe.
Yeah.
And today he lives a block and a half from me. So
are you still in Delaware?
Oh, yeah, I still live in Delaware. Okay. And so anyway, when I turned 30 years old, I went to work for that little chemical company there in Delaware, DuPont.
Little boys.
And so I worked for DuPont's highest-ranking African-American executive, a man named Stacy Mobley. He went on to be corporate CEO of DuPont.
For many years.
Stacy and I were very close. He's now still a senior attorney in Washington, D.C.
Okay. He's still around.
He's still around, very close to Stacy and I are about the same age. Stacy's very close to Joe.
Okay, yes.
And so I was at DuPont from age 30 to 46.
Okay.
I took an early out to start my own practice. So today I do business consulting. I do M&A. I help people buy and sell businesses. I do public affairs, crisis work. What do you do when everything goes wrong?
Yeah.
And then 4 years ago, I bought another company, an expert company, 1,500 subject matter experts all around the country and the world.
Okay.
And they're expert witnesses, and they help people solve technical issues. So I still do that. I took a year off, and I was founding publisher of the state of Delaware statewide business newspaper.
Okay.
I'm up to my neck in business leadership and faith. I'm on the board of the statewide prayer breakfast.
Perfect.
I'm board chairman of the Delaware Safety Council. In multicultural stuff, I'm on the board of the African American Advancement Society, the only white guy on the board.
Okay.
And so I've been
what's left of the NAACP?
What?
What's left of what we call the NAACP?
Yeah, it's called.
But it came with our generation. But unfortunately, we haven't done everything to guide the young people to this organization. So we appreciate your interest.
I've been involved in civil rights since the 60s.
Long time.
When I was vice president of the campus Democrats at the University of Illinois.
Okay.
And even today, as a Baptist, now I have 2 5-year-old grandsons. One of them has 2 mommies. So in a Baptist church, I will speak out for same-gender couples.
Yes.
So I'm still fighting the fight.
Yes.
Different kinds of fights today.
Well, we live in St. Petersburg, and downtown St. Petersburg is now one of those gender areas in this country that those people can come and live like everybody else. Because we can't turn away anybody.
No, we can't. Life's too short.
I always tell people that if you think the Indians got treated bad when they came over here and beat them up and ran them on the West Coast, and then you think the slaves got treated bad when they came over here on ships and they went down and they got picking cotton, you still ain't talking about how bad they treated the Irish.
Yeah.
It's not a color thing.
Or even, interestingly, and I've done some research on it, even the Germans. Now, my last name, is German. My family came over in the 1790s. But at the beginning of World War I, there were 1,500 German language newspapers in America.
Nope.
At the end, there were none.
They took them all.
Why? Because there was so much anti-German bias.
In this country.
They were lynching German-speaking people at the end of World War I because they were afraid of German spies.
That's exactly
and
what happened.
And there were German people who looked like me who were tarred and feathered because
they were German.
Because because they spoke with a German accent.
Listen, black people went through it for years, and then the Indians went through it longer than we had. So when we hear about little Irish and a little German, we begin to understand that it wasn't about what we think it was. It was the rich and the poor. A lot of people don't know it's not about color. It's about the have and the have-nots. There's too many people on the earth right now for the haves to maintain what they're doing. But I'm here to talk about veterans. And I got one of the veterans right with me. We do our show on 96.7. In the daytime, at lunchtime, you can hear from me at 12:30 on Thursdays. But I like the weekend, so I do a Saturday morning show called Rise and Shine. Okay? Of course, this is Voice for Veterans. I have a wonderful veteran here telling me his story, giving us guidance. And we want this to happen more than once. We want to continue to do this. Now, how long are you going to be in St. Pete?
I'm a baseball guy, Keith, so I come down for baseball spring training.
Well, we got need you so that we can finally come to the end and win one. Every year we come to the end.
Well, in Delaware, we follow the Phillies. So I get a hotel room. I come down to Clearwater. I work in the morning. I go to baseball in the afternoon. I work again at night. And I'm here for 4 weeks. I'll be heading back 3 weeks from tonight.
Okay.
And this, as I started with a week the first few years, then 2 weeks. And my wife said, yeah, go ahead, honey. She thinks her vacation.
That's right.
When I'm gone.
It is.
And then 3 weeks. And this year, it's my fourth year, 4 weeks.
Okay. Well, there's no better place in here. We have, three or four teams who either spring training or practice or something right here around the Tampa Bay area.
Actually, there are about six or seven right now.
Okay, he's bringing them. Yep.
You got the Phillies in Clearwater. You got the Yanks in Tampa Bay.
Yes.
You got the Pirates in Bradenton. You got the Orioles
down
in Sarasota.
Right.
You got the Toronto Blue Jays in Dunedin. And you got the Tigers in Lakeland.
That's seven. You heard it right here. He's an expert on where the baseball teams come to this part of the world to enjoy life before they have to go in and fight each other.
That's right.
Because there's no better place. Right now, we have to say, we're number one. Miami used to be number one.
But there's
too many people in Miami.
Tampa Bay is the center of the universe for baseball spring training.
And
real baseball fans like me, I've gotten to the point I almost prefer spring training.
Yeah, because it's better entertainment.
Yeah, last year I think I saw one or two games in Philly,
but
I saw a whole bunch down here.
You saw a bunch down there. And they're young kids, and they're getting strong, and they got the spirit. So I usually go down to the Pirates, I'll be honest with you, down south. And I did go to Steinbrenner Field one time, and it was packed.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, Keith.
It was packed.
Here's the invite. I want you to come out to a game with me in Clearwater, BayCare Stadium, in March this year. I want you to sit there with me. We're going to sit right behind the scouts, right behind the catcher.
And talk crazy to them.
You got it.
Thank you very much for listening to this day. We're going to do this again, of course, with Sam. We become friends now. And we now know that we like to talk sports
and
veterans.
We got some culture.
Got some culture. Now tell them how you got to understand the culture. I need to know the James Brown story because I do entertainment too. And this is important.
Well,
tell them about James Brown.
Well, when I came up, one of the benefits of the civil rights movement out of the 60s is some of those walls that separated us began to break down.
Yes.
And we're still enjoying the benefit of that. I'm a Freemason. I have three or four brothers that I have brought into my lodge, men of color.
Yes.
And I respect the Prince Hall Lodge.
Yes, sir.
But I am so glad that I can sit in my lodge with men of color. And I've felt that way for years.
You.
So we were talking. I remember the party records in the 60s and a woman named Moms Mabley. And she was great, and I grew up, when I was a young guy, just turning 20, with Moms Mabley, so I always enjoyed it. One year, my wife and I, right after they brought gambling to Atlantic City, we'd always go down for a week around Labor Day, and then one year in particular, we went to three or four shows. I call that our soul week. Everyone we saw, the Spinners, the Four Tops.
Yes, sir. Soul music.
And at Resorts International that year, they had James Brown. Now, James had not yet quite crossed over.
Yeah.
So the audience was less people like me and more people like you. But I always would tip a little extra to get right next to the stage. And James was coming out, and he was looking for a gal to sing to bring up on stage. I held my hand up over my wife's head. He walked out. He brought her up on the stage, Keith. He sings to her. And then he comes back, and he walks on the table. He gets me up, and he brings me on stage. And he's got a lead female singer on the other side. So he takes me over. She starts singing to me. And if she starts singing to me, she starts moving and dancing. And all of a sudden, I start to move and dance along with her. Now, but in my case, it was a slow white boy shuffle. And so all of a sudden, I'm doing this, and I feel these hands on my hips, and it's James putting soul in my boots.
You hear it right here first, Keith, the boss of the Legion of Comfort to you live. James Brown did put soul in one white guy's hips, no matter what. He can teach the rest of y'all. You can't beat this kind of stuff, because this is real. This is live. This is what radio, TV, and he's an old press guy. So he understood what to do without any coaching. We really appreciate it. This has been one of my best radio shows. Now that I done heard the James Brown and the Moms Mabley side of it, I knew where you got the soul and the funny. We know it now. Now that you're out, now that you've done well, just tell me a little bit about what you're doing now. Besides me and you going to baseball.
All right. First of all, I'm a grandpa, a pop-pop. I've got 2 5-year-old grandsons.
Pop-pop.
I got one in San Diego by my son and his wife, and I've got one in Raleigh, Durham by my daughter and her wife there.
Okay.
My wife is still full speed ahead. She's a few years younger than I am. She's a VP at Big Pharma, and as I said, we live a block and a half from Joe back home in Delaware. But in my work, since 30 years since I left DuPont, I've got 2 or 3 businesses. I do business planning. So some people will come in, they'll say, Sam, I'm sitting here in my business. I want to double its size in the next 3 years.
And
that's what I work with them on. There'll be somebody who's got as much white hair as I have.
I got you.
And they want to get out, and they want to sell their business, and I'll help them sell
you
business.
You help them prop it up the right way.
I'll help them get the valuation ready and get them ready to sell it. I do crisis management work. I've worked on the issues like predatory clergy. Things like
real
that,
crisis, man.
Real crisis stuff. I call that, what do you do when your chemical plant blows up?
Yeah, already blown up.
A couple of years ago, 4 years ago, I bought another company that's a subject matter expert company, 1,500 subject matter experts in all 50 U.S. states and 20 countries.
Okay.
So I'm going to wear out. I'm not going to rust out. I'm going to be full speed ahead
all the time
until I'm blessed to go home carried out feet first.
We don't believe in, he and I came up the same way, but it was called the work ethic. There was a term for what we did. You put your life in the work. The problem is that the last chapter of the work ethic, they don't talk about what to do when you retire. So the truth of it is, work till you go. Let's keep it all in the same place.
I'll add one important thought on that. As a person of faith, and I go to a Baptist church and have been active in that, I look at my work today, I look at my life today as my ministry.
It's
my way to touch lives. It's my way to be out there and to be able to make a difference. And at the end of the day, when I'm carried out feet first, the legacy that I've left will be in the people I've left behind where I've been blessed.
Now you heard it right now. Now you know what the end chapter is supposed to be in that book when it comes to the work ethic. You have to turn your work into your ministry. Thank you for coming. You just gave me something that I need to share with everybody else, and I think I just shared it. We want to say thank you to Mike Picard, wherever you are, Mike. You're over there at Thurgs, but we're over here. We're still talking about you. Thank you so much. This is the Firestone 500 Grand Prix right here in St. Petersburg. Next week, we will be at the Renaissance 2023 in Dade City. And that is a bunch of white folk in the old days with Cossacks and sticks. One black man came in there, and I'm going to sneak in there. It's going to be Shaka Zulu. Well, I think it was after him. Probably a Hannibal. But I'll show up, and I'll show something no matter what. Keith, the boss of the beach, we saying thank you for tuning in to us. Don't forget, Voice for Veterans, everywhere, on theairtoday.com. Over and out with a shout. Tune in again, 24/7, WVETonlineradio.com. Rise and shine to Sunshine Radio 96.7, Saturday mornings. This is Voice for Veterans and the rest of us who say we support veterans too. News, commentary, information, education, music, and entertainment. New just for you, 96.7. Now, you've heard the rest. Stay tuned for the best. Rise and shine to Sunshine Radio and stay with us all day long. Rise and shine to Sunshine Radio 96.7, Saturday mornings. This is Voice for Veterans and the rest of us who say we support veterans too. News, commentary, information, education, music, and entertainment. New just for you, 96.7. Now, you've heard the rest. Stay tuned for the best. Rise and shine to Sunshine Radio and stay with us all day long.